Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Archaeological Society of Malta entitled Bronze Age Salt, Recovering a Lost Commodity. This talk is delivered by Professor Anthony Harding from the University of Exeter.
Thank you everyone for inviting me and indeed for coming to hear this talk. I should say at the outset, I'm not going to be talking about sea salt, which is relevant to Malta or areas around the Mediterranean. This is about inland salt. If you lived on the Mediterranean shores, it was probably quite easy to get hold of salt anyway. So you know, you have your coastal salt lagoons and so on, and you know all about that. So this is about a different problem. People who lived in the interior of Europe who didn't have access or didn't automatically have access to salt. Now, I don't know if should the lights go down a bit, or is it okay? Is it going to be okay? I don't know. That's better, I think. Thank you. Start with this map, which was produced by a German author a few years ago, as you can see. And he was looking at the question of salt in prehistory and what the evidence was. And this is the map from him that related to the Bronze Age. So he pointed particularly to the evidence in eastern Germany around Halle, which we'll come back to, of course, to the famous site of Hallstatt in the Austrian Alps, which started in the Bronze Age. In eastern France, the area around Lorraine. In southwestern Germany, Baden. Potentially sites in Britain, though not Droitwich, actually. And then various coastal sites around the North Sea, around the Baltic. That was sort of, you know, fairly familiar ground as to what the evidence might be, but it was, with few exceptions, pretty sparse. He then added on this, purely speculatively, I think, the possibility of exploitation in Romania. Now, one has to, when one's considering ancient salt, the first thing one has to get to grips with is the idea of special pottery containers, either for evaporating the salt, brine, or for transporting it. And for this, we use the French word briquetage. And these are classic examples of briquetage from the area around Halle in eastern Germany, with an arrangement of particular things, these cylindrical spools, conical chalices, spool-like things here, a classic arrangement of things. I mean, no one quite knows why they should be in this form, but they are. Very coarse pottery, which was used initially in the evaporation process of brine, and then potentially in transporting it, at least some of it. What we can say about ancient salt production is that the idea of salt mines, as you see in this example here, is not what we're talking about in ancient mining. In modern industrial mining, or in this case in the Austrian period in Romania, you know, we're talking about very large scale extraction of blocks of salt done with modern machinery and so on. So ancient salt mining, either for rock salt or anything else, would not have been on this sort of scale. So it's important to get that straight, I think, at the outset. Now, why is salt important? There are a number of reasons, I think. Obviously, we know that everyone needs a certain intake of salt. Different authorities differ as to exactly how much you need. Well, the minimum is said to be something like 6 grams a day. And of course, nowadays, we get that very easily through our diet, especially if you eat processed food. What happens if you don't get your 6 grams is apparently you get a bit peaky, and eventually you can decline and even die, I'm told. In Exeter, we run an experimental MA course in experimental archaeology. I've always thought it would be very nice to try it out. The students should try out what happens if they don't take any salt for 9 months and see what happens. But unfortunately, I think there are ethical considerations in this, especially now that they're paying large sums of money to come and study. So that's out, unfortunately. But anyway, we all need salt. And so if you don't have salt at hand, you have to find ways of getting it so that you won't get ill. And because salt isn't found everywhere, people who had access to it obviously could then move it to those who didn't have access to it, didn't have it themselves. So if you didn't, if you weren't sitting near a salt massif, you would have to take steps to get hold of salt from people who did have it. Now it's where in our day and age we don't need to worry about salt. You can go and buy it in the shops, and the processes for getting it are very straightforward. It's all done for us. But if you live nearer the land, as in many peasant communities in Europe at the present day, you have a different attitude to it. And I simply show you this because in large parts of Eastern Europe, people still use salt brine on a regular basis in daily life, not to drink, not to give to their animals in that form, but to pickle their foodstuffs. And in that way, they can keep their vegetables, mainly vegetables, but also potentially meat, for times when there isn't any fresh food available. And as the slide implies, it's a way of storing salt brine, not rock salt, you understand, but salt brine, as it were, on the bone, encapsulated in the foodstuffs for later use. Now this, I think, rather charming photograph shows you a guy, a small farmer, peasant farmer, in Moldavia, in eastern Romania, collecting brine from the salt well here, putting it in his milk churns, taking it home on his cart. And each peasant family does this regularly, once a month or so. These well heads are in constant use. That is brine, and it is mostly brine that I'm going to be talking about, rather than rock salt, although people tend to think of rock salt rather than brine. Rock salt is pretty tough stuff to work with. It takes a lot of hammering to get it out. What they do with blocks like this is, which have come from a massif like that, is they give it to animals to lick. You don't eat rock salt just as it is. Animals lick it, and you yourself wouldn't want to eat rock salt. You have to, what you do is you soak water in it and get heavily briny water that way, then you evaporate the water. So you don't eat rock salt directly. It's full of impurities, apart from anything else, it wouldn't be at all nice. And your teeth would suffer enormously. So that's what happens with the rock salt at the present day. So going back to the people who've got salt and the people who haven't got it, the denser the stippling here, the more available salt is. So ignoring this stuff over in the Far East there, you can see there's a big band of salt goes through continental Europe and stretches out into Britain as well, comes down through southern France and into parts of Spain. And from what I'm going to be talking about mostly now is this part here, and then in the Carpathians and inside the Carpathian ring in Transylvania. You see there are other areas as well, but those are the main areas of importance at the present day. But of course, important also is the fact that there are some areas, like much of France here, this part which is Austria and Hungary, where there is no salt, so they have to get hold of it. So as I said at the start, I'm not going to be talking about Mediterranean areas, because although there's not much rock salt in Italy, for instance, there's plenty of they don't need it because they can evaporate seawater, purifies seawater through salt lagoons, and that's, of course, we know what happened. Now, warming to my theme about Bronze Age salt, the curious thing is that with the exceptions that I showed you at the beginning, very little is known about it. Though, curiously, Neolithic salt had become much better known in these places. I'll show you a couple of pictures in a minute of certainly Anatolia and Moldavia. and indeed Poland. So, Anatolia, well, there's lots of salt in the Great Salt Lake that you see here, the Tuzgolu, and you can buy packets of it at a little stall if you visit the Salt Lake. And of course, it may be no coincidence that many of the most famous Neolithic tell sites are situated within striking distance of the Great Salt Lake. It's been claimed that that's why even places like Çatalhöyük are where they are. I'm not sure that's particularly persuasive, but it's certainly there is plenty of salt within easy reach. Then if we go to Romania and Moldavia, there are these sites up here which have been demonstrated, and I'll show you a couple of pictures in a minute, to be relevant to Neolithic salt exploitation. They're in the just on the eastern flanks of the Carpathians here. So here's one example. Very typical appearance, you'll see several of these, a well head for a brine spring, and a scatter of there's the well head here, and down here is a scatter of Neolithic pottery. And from another site, actual bricotage, masses of it. I've been to this site and you can pick it up, it's falling out all over the place. So lots and lots of evidence there for Neolithic extraction. And then this place, Lunca, you saw this picture before of the guy collecting his brine. This here is a small mound, mainly of Neolithic date. Goes through the Kurish culture, principally. So starting something like 5000 BC, existing for a couple of thousand years, right beside a salt spring, seems too good to be true. There's no bricotage there, but putting a settlement site right beside a salt well seems fairly conclusive, one might think. And then long ago it was shown that there are these little pots from southern Poland, near the great salt sources of southern Poland, Wieliczka being the most famous of the salt mines there, of Neolithic date. So again, Neolithic exploitation. So the question then would arise, since it's perfectly clear that there's Neolithic exploitation going on, why on earth isn't there more Bronze Age evidence, apart from the few bits I showed you at the start? There's plenty of salt around Europe. Why can't we spot people exploiting it more? So where were the production sites? How was it produced? And can we demonstrate if and how it might have been moved from salt-rich to salt-poor areas? Well, there is a certain amount of evidence starting to come on stream. I've given the examples here, Poland and Britain, and a couple of slides to make that point. So bits of bricotage from late Bronze Age sites in Poland, not actually interestingly on the salt massif, but very close to it. And in Britain as well, an increasing number of sites have produced evidence for a Bronze Age bricotage. Here's a classic case in point from this site down on in the southwest here on the Bristol Channel. Classic bricotage of Bronze Age date. So, you know, all is not lost, and it was on seeing this sort of material that it made me wonder why we couldn't spot more of it elsewhere. And given the interest that has been devoted to salt in the Carpathian region, as we saw here a minute ago, I became interested with a Romanian colleague to see if we could find out more about it in that part of the world. And we started looking at sites in various places. I'm not going to talk any about this one, Olten, but I shall say something about the sites in the Homerod Valley, and I mentioned this place Pride before, that's in that same area. But then I shall talk about an interesting find from this place over in central Transylvania, but most of the time I'll talk about work that I've been involved with up in the north of Transylvania, up there. Okay, so that's where we're located. So this is the Homerod Valley, and the symbols on it represent, as you can see, salt springs or salt mines, or the green symbols, the well heads that you saw an example of already. You can see there's plenty of them around. If we overlay on that known prehistoric and Roman and medieval sites, you can see that, well, it wouldn't be surprising to find that people in prehistory and in the Roman period were exploiting these. And certainly for the Roman period, we specifically know that they were. There's this place, St. Paul, where you can see there are salt well heads, there's a salt mine, and there are Roman sites close by. There's a Roman fort, in fact. And from this site, a long time ago, I forget when, maybe in the 19th century, this altar was recovered. There's another one from another site as well. But the interesting thing is about it, it refers to this character who was the conductor salinarum. He was a manager of a salt works. And that's not surprising, because there is this salt mine and salt springs right beside. So that's enough Roman stuff. Move on to back to prehistory now. So this is the area in question, and you can see the typical arrangement. Here's the well head. That's what it looks like inside. That's the valley in question at St. Paul. And just coming down the hill from that well head is this salty stream, and it's got lots of timbers sticking out of it. We got some dates on this. We had no idea what date these might be. In fact, I only got these dates a few months ago. And they turned out to be four like this. So four dates, and three of them fall in the historic period. But one of them, at 500 Cal BC, falls in the Iron Age. None of them, interestingly, are Roman. But then it would be perhaps a long shot to find that those particular timbers we sampled might have been Roman. But there's certainly some evidence then, that's obviously evidence for historic production of salt, and clearly some evidence for ancient production of salt. So that's the site St. Paul. But then, moving on from that, as to some extent these charts are the history of our research in the area, because we started off by looking at St. Paul and the sites in that valley. But then was brought to our attention a find that had been made a long time ago at a place called Valia Florilor, of a large wooden trough which had been published some time before but hadn't attracted any attention. And it looked like this. A wooden trough. I mean, it's a rather bad drawing, but you can see more or less what it is. And in the bottom of it, there's a series of holes filled with pegs. Well, that was interesting. And one of our colleagues, this guy, Volman, located where this trough had got to in a private collection in Cluj, and he managed to persuade the owners to give him some samples for dating, and they came out like as you see here. So there's only one sample, one date, but it's clearly a date in the Bronze Age. So that was interesting. And then another trough has been known. This one came out without any context from a modern salt mine not far from Cluj. And you can see it's been cut there like that, but it too, it's got these holes in the bottom. But our real stroke of luck came from this find here. This wooden trough was pulled out of a place called Figa in 2005, just as we were turning our attention to this part of Transylvania. So let's go back a minute. And you could see here it is in the museum in the regional town called Bystrica. And you can just about make out these pegs along the bottom. According to the excavator, who was a geologist, not an archaeologist, and unfortunately he pulled it out without any archaeological supervision at all, it lay something over a meter deep in this salty stream at an inclined angle. Now that's all we know about the extraction, except it was very difficult, and it's very heavy, you can imagine. If you look at the drawing of it, it's over 3 meters long, 3.22 meters long, it's a big thing. It's got these series of holes in the bottom here, and the holes are filled with pegs. The trough is made of pine, apparently, and the pegs are made of elder wood. And more than that, you can see projecting from one of the pegs a bit of cord. Here is the cord. This is the drawing of one of the pegs. They have this sort of collar to stop them going through the hole. And the cord is placed, they're perforated, the cord is placed in the perforation. And subsequently, we found quite a lot more of more pegs lying in the stream bed. And as you see, we actually excavated a couple of them as well. And in another case, the perforation was filled with a sort of wooden needle-like, splinter-like object. So very curious. And naturally, we were concerned to see what date this thing might be, this trough. So a couple of samples we took in 2005, and perhaps not surprisingly, perhaps you won't be surprised to hear now, that the combined date of the two samples fell in this time range, so a bit later, quite a lot later, 200-300 years later than the example from Valia Florilor, but still clearly in the Bronze Age. So that set the scene and suggested to us that there was something rather interesting going on at this site and potentially other sites as well. So we then embarked on a survey of the site in question. And this is what it looks like at the present day. Well, it's what it looked like a few years ago. The ironic thing was that no sooner had we indicated our intention to carry out survey and excavation here than we discovered that there was an intention on the part of the local authorities and a local developer to build a new spa complex here. And that has now started, and all this part round here is now a construction site. So, you know, it's just the luck of the draw. No sooner do you find something really interesting than you discover it's going to be destroyed. What you're looking at is all these hillocks and depressions are the places where people have dug for salt in recent times and in historic times, but potentially also in ancient times. The trough came out from this stream here, somewhere up around about there. There's a main stream, comes down here, goes up to a spring up there, and there's a side stream, comes down from there. And both of these are very salty indeed. And it's not only a trough that was present in this stream, the thing is completely full of wood. Posts and piles and horizontals and verticals and all sorts sitting in this stream. This is what it looked like when we started work. And you know, some of them clearly constructions of some complexity. It looks almost like a sort of dam. We refer to them as a dam, though I think that's not actually what they are. So obviously we had to do something about this, so we embarked in 2006, we did a measured survey of the site by total station, and during the process we spotted other things of interest, like just lying in the stream bed, stones, apparently crude stones, but you notice this little waste here. There are a number of these things. And I think the first thing we found was this, which is probably a Neolithic shaft hole axe, but then a number of these wasted stones, which I immediately recognized as what we are commonly called mining tools of this sort. It's become clear that wherever there are ancient mines, prehistoric mines, in Spain, in Slovakia, in Britain, and elsewhere, these wasted tools are found, and this is a potential reconstruction of how they might have been used, basically as sledgehammers to break up the rock face. So that seemed, you know, nice piece of evidence, or further evidence, that there's prehistoric working going on. Well, the measured survey, I think you can't see this terribly well, but wherever there are yellow dots, those are pieces of timber. So you can see there's a big concentration up here, down the stream there, big concentration down there. And in, as I'll show you in a minute, in 2007 we started excavation, one trench in this area and one trench in this area here. And then subsequently we've done another small trench near where the trough was found, around there. So that's what the measured survey, the sort of results that come out from the total station survey, with each dot representing a numbered, measured, catalogued piece of wood. And this produced about 450 pieces of wood sitting visible at that time, in 2006, in the stream bed. And I took more samples, and six of them were dated at that time. And perhaps not surprisingly then, we find that four of the six fell in the Bronze Age, that's this four here. One of them fell in the Iron Age, 2230 before present, means it's about 200 to 100 BC. And one of them was 1500 years old, in other words, it falls in the early medieval period, late Roman, early medieval. So that was also interesting and gave further indications that there was ancient, well, working of several different periods going on. Though at that stage we couldn't then specify, you know, how the different phases might relate to each other. So in 2007 we started excavation work in the two trenches whose position I mentioned to you. And the two areas were quite different. In this one, trench one, the south, near where the spring, the salt spring emerges, that's where I was working, and very quickly we discovered that the wooden posts gave way to a much more complicated set of installations, including the presence of two more wooden troughs. Here's one, there's the other side of it, you can see. And lots of verticals of various kinds. You can just see over there what looks like some small timbers. They are small timbers. They're part of a wattle construction, and you'll see more of that in a minute. So this is one of the troughs recovered. You can see the holes down the bottom, and the pegs were present as well. And not only that, but clearly the troughs had been positioned in such a way and held in, with these wooden constructions and tied in using these withies or bindings of plant material to keep them in position. Quite what position, of course, is not very clear. But you can see the extraordinary detail of some of these things, the bindings of something like clematis or ivy round these posts, presumably tying them together and maybe keeping them upright. And then last year we extended the trench and found that a little to the east a completely different sort of construction is present, like a square wooden box. Lots of fallen timbers in the inside, but basically it appears to, this was in an earlier stage of excavation and we've dug it further down than this picture shows. It's a wooden box. It reminds one rather of the constructions that are present in the Iron Age salt workings at Hallstatt in Austria. It's probably either lining a shaft by which they're getting down to the rock salt, which lies 2 or 3 meters under this round surface here, or possibly it's a container for storing brine. We don't know which yet. And on the other side then, so that the troughs were recovered from this area here, they've been removed in this picture. So this was just taken last August. And on the other side is this, you see it's a ladder, not a problem. It's obviously a ladder. And it's going down into the ground. It's going down below the water table. It's obviously going down into a shaft, below levels that we could actually reach. Though we did, by the end, actually extract this ladder. It goes a long way down. And we have samples taken from it for dating, though I don't have those dates yet. So that's what this trench looked like at the end of the excavation. Well, almost the end of the excavation. The ladder hasn't been removed, but it was a day or so later. So this is where the troughs were. This is where the ladder goes down into this deep shaft. And here is this box lining another shaft going down. So a very complex set of arrangements. And I wouldn't pretend to understand exactly how all this works. The other trench, which my Romanian colleague excavated, was completely different. And you see a picture of it here. Now, here, people were concentrating on making in small enclosures defined by fences of wattle, made of wattle. You can see this very clearly in this round arrangement here, but also further wattle walls over there. So it's not at all clear how this functions, but there's lots and lots of worked wood from the site, which is going to need extensive study. But presumably, again, and I should say, as you'll see in a minute, there are radiocarbon dates indicating that most of this dates to the Bronze Age. Presumably, this is something for keeping brine in, rather than a shaft. I think these are actual brine constructions, and they probably sealed the wattle with clay to stop too much water escaping too quickly. And as if that wasn't enough, not far from where the very first trough had been found, there was this thing was visible on the surface, and my colleague was determined to pull this thing out, and here you can see it turns out to be another trough, complete with pegs. The time I left the site, he hadn't actually extracted it, but I think he has now. And then we've got a series of new radiocarbon dates, 35 of them. And of those 35, 25 fall in the Bronze Age, majority in the time span you can see. So fairly, we don't know exactly, I haven't had time yet to analyze exactly which timbers fall in which phase, but a time span over something like 600 years. One of them appears to belong to the early Bronze Age, and there are a few early Bronze Age sherds found in the northern part of the site. Six of them confirm the idea that there's Iron Age exploitation going on, which I suggested from the first set of six dates. Three of them are early medieval, and perhaps not surprisingly, one's modern, from a timber that indeed was suspected to be modern. So maybe a bit of waste of money there, but never mind. So that seems fairly clear. There's clearly a lot of prehistoric exploitation going on here. Now, leaving Figa for the moment, which is just there, we had been told that there was another site that looked like Figa, not far away, up at this place, Sasam, just the other side of the local town. Charming name, looks in English like Be Clean. It's actually called Beklean, but the locals have adopted this the slogan, Be Clean. The local mayor is now urging everyone to not drop litter and to be clean, so that's a nice little comic touch. At Sasam, which I'm only going to show you this one picture of, There is a well head, which you can just see there. And over here, there's an area of eroding Bronze Age sherds. All up this valley here, right up there, are an extraordinary number of wooden installations. Some of them, like this one, have wattle fencing, just the same sort of thing as that we've seen at Figa. Others of them are clearly recent. The locals say that they remember people digging for salt during the Second World War. And indeed, in one place, there is a reinforced concrete girder, so you know, there's no doubt about that. I think things like this are the remains of shafts going into the side of the valley and are probably quite modern. Others of them are probably ancient. I've now taken samples for dating, but they haven't been submitted for dating yet. I don't have any money at the moment, but hope to solve that soon. So, that I think this appeared to give us a clue into how the timbers at Figa were being used. They're used for digging into the side of the valley, supporting it with these wattle fences, and then they were getting at the rock salt face and hacking it out. And that's what a technology that's been carried on virtually down to the present day. Now, as if that wasn't enough, last year, in April, I was taken to another site which had been found by one of my colleagues' staff over at this place here, just a few miles away, about 10 miles away. And lo and behold, exactly the same sort of thing going on. Here's the modern wellhead. Here's lots of timbers sticking up all over the place. And lying on the surface, I found this timber here. It's very destroyed, eroded, but it's, well, I didn't know what it was at the time, but I know now it's clearly the bottom of a trough. In this case, it's got these rectangular holes in the bottom. And so we went back last August and did a measured survey of the site, and perhaps you won't be surprised to learn that, lo and behold, we found another trough sitting here. You can see one of the pegs sticking out. In fact, it had been visible all along. There it is. We just hadn't noticed it initially. Now, that hasn't been excavated. We don't have permission to excavate on that site yet, though I've taken samples for dating. Now, this starting to form a bit of a pattern, you might say. And the pattern is sort of reinforced when this historic photograph was drawn to our attention. Objects found at a place in what's now Ukraine back in the early 19th century when it was part of Austria. And these things were taken to Budapest but have long disappeared. And you can see what we're looking at is a ladder, maybe similar to what the ladder we found, a trough, a hammer there, and what my colleague interprets as a block of rock salt with these sort of funnel-like depressions in it. He thinks the trough and these things go together. It's very difficult to make out from this what it really is. I'm not convinced he's right, but anyway, more of that in a moment. Well, after, I don't say much searching, but after many inquiries in Budapest, who denied all knowledge of it, they eventually turned up. They were moved to another museum in Hungary, and that is where they are now. I haven't been there to see them myself yet. These photos were sent me by the museum in Sopron. But they clearly show, here's the ladder, what we assume is the ladder, here's the hammer, and here is the trough. So, you know, I hope to get there within the next few months to get some samples, or to arrange drawings and to get some more samples. So, since that was clearly from an important or potentially important site, my colleague and I arranged to go there last summer and see what we could find. And here is our guide, Josip Kobal, standing by a wellhead of just the same sort that you've seen plenty of already, and you'll see more in a minute. Well, we went to this place where the trough was supposed to have come from, and it looks like this at the present day, a large water-filled hole. But nearby there are smaller shafts with wood peeping out. So one can't say it's, you know, quite clear and very hopeful, but there's possibly some remains. Just downstream from that is a wellhead. I know it looks like a privy, but in fact that's a brine spring. And just where they're building a construction on the site, they told us they've come across timbers deep down, which they saw up and get rid of. So I took a sample from one of those as well. So partial success, doesn't look frightfully promising. Another site in the same area might be more promising, because this is an ancient salt mining area. There's lots and lots of wood visible in it. It last summer, all this is wet and boggy, no way of getting out to it, but I'm trying to persuade my colleague from Ukraine to, now that it's frozen at the moment, to go and take some samples so that we can get some dates on some of this wood. So that was sort of the follow-up, partially successful. We went to Slovakia as well, saw lots of brine springs, though nothing very clearly ancient. So going back to the troughs, we've got at least eight, and you see them all listed there, four at Figa, one or possibly more at Kyla, and then the other ones. And then there are ladders from three of those sites. So it raises the whole question of what on earth is going on. So this is a map, just adding on the dots, using Google Earth to show you where we are. So our sites in Romania are here. This is the present-day frontier between Romania and Ukraine. That's Hungary there. And that's where the one that was in Budapest came from. And this is a very salt-rich area all around here. So it brings us to the question of trying to work out what on earth is going on in these troughs. Various ideas have been put forward. I think one thing one probably can say is that the cord filling the perforation in the pegs is presumably there to let water either come slowly in or go slowly out of the trough. Probably out rather than in. But what does that then mean? Or maybe the trough is raised on supports, as we've seen. And the brine then evaporated and it became more concentrated, and then it would be let out through the holes, maybe. Or possibly the cord could bring brine water in by capillary action, and it might get concentrated by that means. That's perhaps not very likely. What might seem an obvious thing would be that the evaporation was speeded up by putting hot stones in, but I think if that were the case, we would have found evidence for fire-cracked stones, which we haven't really got. And this last one is the one that my colleague favours, which relates back to that photo, the historic photograph, that you placed the trough over the rock salt, and you let the water drip through the holes slowly, and over time, long time, it would then create depressions in the rock and would help you to break it up. But he's taken a video of a modern guy breaking up rock salt at the moment, and it's tough stuff. This guy was using a sort of 15-kilo sledgehammer and iron wedges, and it still took him half an hour to get a chunk of stuff out. And we're talking about prehistory when they didn't have 15-kilo sledgehammers or iron wedges. So maybe they used artificial means to help things go along, and this dripping process, well, it needs to be tried experimentally to see if it really works. It seems sort of unlikely to me on the face of it, but who knows. Now the last part of what I was going to talk to you about is, well, I've talked about, you know, technologies for getting salt. What can we say about the position of salt in the economy? Because in a way, that's really the most important question. And the technology is interesting, but it's a means to an end. It's often been suggested that where salt is present and where salt was being worked, there other things would follow. For instance, that wealth would be accumulated, and the Romanians have particularly suggested that the distribution of bronze hoards in their country, a Bronze Age date, is specifically connected with the presence and exploitation of salt. Well, maybe. Or, as in the case of Hallstatt, it's always assumed that the rich graves of this part of Austria in the early Iron Age was connected with their control of the salt sources there and their extraction of it and their export of it around parts of Europe. Well, the latter sounds perfectly plausible. I don't have any means of testing that at the moment. But what about the former? What about the hoards? I've always wanted to do a proper analysis of it, but until I get a grant to enable this to happen, and reliant on a rather more primitive method of analysis, which is to plot the bronze hoards onto a map, which is what I've done here. Each red dot is a Bronze Age hoard of bronze. See the particular concentration in Transylvania here. And then you compare that with the the salt map we saw before. So the dense concentrations of salt are in the Carpathian ring here, on the flanks of the Carpathians, and then in this ring encircling Transylvania. And put the two together, and it looks something like that. Well, I don't know what you think, but to my mind, that's not particularly convincing as a correlation, though it does need to be tested statistically. What I think, in fact, of course, the Bronze Age hoards are telling you is that they're near metal sources. Transylvania is very rich in metal, particularly copper, gold, and it wouldn't be any great surprise to find lots of bronze being produced and deposited in that area. What I haven't got to show you is a map showing you the copper production areas, but I think you would find there was a much closer correlation were I to produce it. In any case, if we were go further west into Hungary, the Hungarian plain, there's no salt there, but there's lots and lots of bronze hoards. So I don't myself think that the two are correlated in any meaningful way. So to sum up where this leaves us, in both theoretically and in the light of recent work, I think the work we've done has been able to show that salt extraction really was an important industry, and even if we don't know exactly how it was done, it was certainly going on in the Bronze Age, as in the Neolithic, and of course in the Iron Age, we knew that already. So the salt, absence of salt is in the Bronze Age is only apparent, it's not real. And it seems that both brine springs and rock salt were exploited, but what we don't have, in Romania at least, is briquetage of the sort I showed you at the beginning of the talk in Germany, and is present also in Britain and France. So it's known ethnographically. There's plenty. You don't actually need briquetage. You can do it by other means, and clearly what we've got with these wooden constructions are one of the other means. So if salt was moved about, it wasn't done in clay containers. It was done in organic containers, or maybe just as in historic Africa, as cakes of salt. There are wonderful ethnographic pictures of blocks of salt, not rock salt, I mean, but caked, evaporated salt being transported around. So if it was transported, that's how it must have been done. Well, we don't yet know, of course, how the troughs were used, but I think the excavation evidence shows us that people were digging shafts to get at the rock salt, and I think what they were then doing was putting the extracted chunks of rock salt in the water to make brine, and then the troughs are somehow used to concentrate the brine to make salt, to make crystal salt crystals. So I think you'll agree that the evidence shows us very clearly that at least at Fega, and potentially at the other sites as well, there's lots of Bronze Age production going on, at least there. But, as I've said, association with other economic manifestations is still speculative and perhaps unlikely. We would like to be able to extend our work in Romania, but it's going to depend on getting more grants. And it would be nice to extend this work into other countries. The country I haven't yet been able to do primary work on salt in, or had a go, is Poland, southeast Poland specifically, because that's part of the same salt massif. And I've certainly been shown pictures of brine springs that look very similar, but no wooden constructions have turned up yet. In other parts of Europe, there is briquetage, but it tends to occur by chance. You couldn't go out into the landscape and say, right, I'm going to go out and find a Bronze Age salt working site with briquetage. It can't be done. They turn up by chance. You could do it with the Iron Age and the Roman period, because we have these things called Red Hills, which are salt production sites, but none of them has been shown to be Bronze Age. And so this leaves us with the, I suppose you could say, a conundrum still, that there is still much to find out about how the production, exploitation of salt, transport of salt, integrates with other aspects of the economy in the Bronze Age, and no doubt in other periods as well. So that's the task, the major task that remains for us in the coming years. Thanks very much.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Archaeological Society of Malta entitled Bronze Age Salt, Recovering a Lost Commodity. This talk was delivered by Professor Anthony Harding from the University of Exeter.